Olá, está no podcast do Biosfera. Excepcionalmente, este episódio será em inglês. Conversamos sobre a decisão do Tribunal de Justiça da União Europeia de obrigar a que dois químicos usados apenas em cosméticos sejam testados em animais, o que contradiz o regulamento para os cosméticos. We are here today with Dylan Underhill from Cruelty Free International and with Rita Silva from Animal, Portuguese member of Cruelty Free Europe. Dylan, I'll start with you. This decision came at the end of November. Were you following the case?
Thanks, Rita. Yeah, no, we were following the case very closely. In fact, we were involved. We intervened on the case. So it's possible in cases like this, when you can show that the decision will have an impact on you as an organization, that you can intervene to provide additional legal support, which we did in this case. So yeah, we've been following it and been involved with it very closely. But it's something also before we intervene that we were very interested in, because the implications of it are very important for our work. So we've been following it throughout. So Symrise were initially asked to carry out these tests in 2018, and they challenged that request directly with ECHA at the time, with their Board of Appeal, which was rejected. And they then took that up to the General Court, which is obviously where we're at now. We've been following very closely and with great interest throughout.
We are talking about two chemicals used on sunscreens. Sunscreens are considered cosmetics, right? And the European Cosmetics Regulation states that there shouldn't be animal testing for cosmetics.
That's right, yeah. So there are chemicals used in sunscreens which are classed as a cosmetic. And you're right, there's a regulation in the EU called the Cosmetic Products Regulation, which regulates the safety for consumers of cosmetic products. And within that are contained what we call the cosmetic testing bans, which say that a cosmetic ingredient or a finished product cannot be tested on animals in order to satisfy the needs of that regulation. So yeah, that's a key point here. But obviously there's other regulations which kind of are related, and it's the overlap and the friction between the two that's kind of at play here. That's what's kind of caused the complication that has given this case to arise.
We have REACH on the table, right? The Regulation for Chemical Use Safety. How does REACH and the cosmetics regulation relate? Which one takes priority?
Yeah, you asked the million-dollar question. That's the really kind of crucial point that we've been trying to get at throughout this whole process. So yeah, there are two bits of regulation that are important. One is the cosmetics regulation that we just discussed, and as you say, REACH regulations, which kind of regulate the safe production and use of chemicals throughout the EU. The thing that makes this complicated and confusing is that cosmetics ingredients are a subset of chemicals. So the ingredients that Symrise have been asked to carry out animal tests on, yes, they're cosmetics ingredients, but they are also technically chemicals. So theoretically, both bits of regulation should apply to them. The problem is that the cosmetics regulation, as we've already discussed, says you cannot test those chemicals on animals, and the REACH regulation says that you should. And that's where the friction comes in and the complication. We argue, as did Symrise, that in this case, because those chemicals are exclusively used in cosmetics, that the cosmetics regulation should take priority. ECHA and the Commission have disagreed, and unfortunately, in this case, the courts sided with them. So the implication of that is that these ingredients and other such ingredients, which are exclusively used in cosmetics, will be required at the moment to be tested on animals, which it goes without saying we are very disappointed by.
Is this the first time since 2013 that the cosmetics regulation has been put to test to such an extent?
Well, yeah, this is a story that goes back, as you suggest, before the Symrise case. So as I said, they were asked to carry out these tests in 2018, but the cosmetics regulation came into force in 2003 and then REACH in 2006. And there has been disagreement ever since, really, about how those two bits of regulation should coexist and work alongside each other. This is the kind of most recent and most clear example of that conflict. And it's the thing that is kind of drawing fresh attention to the issue. And that's exactly why, as I said, that we've been following it and been engaged with it so closely. But yeah, this is kind of a bigger complication and a bigger question that we've been trying to answer for some time. And as I say, we've consistently argued that the cosmetics regulation should take priority. It came first. It was a kind of expression of the public will that animal testing should not be carried out on cosmetics. And that's something that we know that the public still thinks, because 1.2 million citizens across the EU signed the European Citizens Initiative that said exactly that. And we think that that context is really important and should be taken into account. It also seems like the MEPs in the parliament at the time of the REACH regulation, when that was being debated, it seems like they thought the same, because it's stated quite clearly in the regulation that REACH should apply without prejudice to the cosmetics regulation. In other words, that the bans should still apply. And that's an argument that we made in the courts. And, you know, without going into too much of the legal detail, ECHA argued differently, and the courts on this occasion, unfortunately, have agreed with them. There's quite some sort of complicated reasons around the scope of REACH in terms of it applying to workers' safety rather than consumer safety, which is covered by the cosmetics regulation. So they argued that it shouldn't apply for that reason. We think that that's kind of legal semantics, and that actually the practical implication of this ruling is that cosmetics ingredients will be tested on animals. And that goes against the kind of intention and the purpose of that regulation and the clearly stated wishes of the public.
I know Cruelty-Free has done the math. How many animals will this decision affect?
Yeah, so it's difficult to say exactly, but our scientists, I should say, I'm not a scientist or a lawyer, but we have very good lawyers and very clever scientists who do the calculations. So we think that something like 5,500 animals will be implicated in these kinds of tests. And it's also worth talking about, when we're thinking about the numbers, what kinds of tests are going to take place. Now, it's not very pleasant, but I think we should touch upon them. So just to summarize, it's rats and mice and rabbits and these kind of things being force-fed these substances and then killed and dissected in order to study the implications. So it's quite horrific. And as we say, I think about 5,500 for this particular case. But as you say, there are broader implications, because there are other substances that will be required to be tested on animals. So the true figure in relation to this kind of case is much bigger. And overall, there is about 7.3 million procedures on animals in Europe. That's the latest figure that we have. It comes from 2020. So this is just the kind of tip of the iceberg. It's an example. But yeah, the true figures for cosmetics ingredients are likely to be higher. And the kind of the bigger picture of animal testing, the scale of that is much greater as well.
Rita, now to you. Rita Silva from Animal. You've been following animal welfare for a long time now. Was it a disappointment to see this decision from a Portuguese standpoint?
It's not a big surprise, to be honest, because unfortunately, Portugal has not been a very progressive country on this issue. Still, it's problematic and it's symptomatic of how things are seen and how animal experiments are seen on this country. Unfortunately, we have two different bodies, two different institutions taking care of this issue. We have APA on the environmental part, so concerning the REACH program, we have APA. And then we have DGAV, which is extremely ineffective, who takes care of all the other issues concerning animals and animal welfare, so to say. And for you to have an idea of how things are here in Portugal, It's an obligation for this institution to make public the numbers of animals used and the species of animals used every year in experiments. And the last one we have, it's 2021. So 2022 is missing and we're almost ending 2023. And even more obscure is that we have all the numbers of experiments and species, but not the numbers of animals, which is really confusing and weird and not transparent, despite us asking lots of questions about this transparency and Portugal being a member state obliged to follow all the European regulations. It shouldn't happen that we don't have this type of transparency. So Portugal is pretty much a problem.
Even so, do you have any idea, any estimates about how many animals are used for testing, for example, annually? And for what areas? Medicine, food testing?
We're talking about several, and I can talk to you about, for instance, the last ones, the 2021. You have in every field, imagine, you have in education, because you have several educational institutions which use animal testing on their facilities, or they demand animal testing outside. You have medicine, yes, you have several teaching hospitals who use and facilities who use animals for testing, and also on other fields. And you have since fish to mice, some so-called farm animals also used. And again, I can give you an example of, for instance, total of, this is official numbers, a total for investigation, regulations, production, teaching, and training, they call it, on 2021 of several of these species. They don't say how many animals of species, but they say we have had 77,835 utilizations. So we don't know how many animals, but we know how many procedures, which makes no sense. We can have 100 procedures with one pig and one procedure with a chicken. We don't know. Then you have also the genetically altered animals. They had a total of 82,406 utilizations in 2021. Again, we have two different species, but no number of individuals used. And this is just to give you an example of what's going on here. They also have a number of animals used in oncology studies. And again, they have the number of utilizations, 8,191, but no numbers of animals, nor which animals. They explain for what. For the heart, for the nervous system, for the breathing system, for the gastro, endocrinal, whatever, but no specification of which animals. And they tend to explain a lot, for instance, on these oncology parts, they tend to explain a lot. And we believe it's because people will get more, they will feel that it's more justifiable because it's for human health, it's for cancer, it's for other diseases that are horrible. And it's kind of a way of taking the sensitivity out of people because, of course, when you show horrible diseases and then they call it the necessary evil, right? Which we know it's not necessary because there are lots of non-animal methods validated. So it's a very weird way of putting things, not giving the actual numbers, but talking about the diseases and, you know, it's a little bit problematic that we have this type of explanation, which is not quite an explanation.
I was going to ask about that last part. We have this European regulation that bans testing for cosmetics. Do you think there is a way forward to reduce or remove animal testing on other areas?
Absolutely. If there is a will, there is a way. And actually, we have ways, like I said, I'm also not a scientist, but we are backed by an expertise scientific team. We know that there are, and this is public knowledge and science knowledge too, that there are several validated non-animal methods in several countries here in the European Union, including in European Union. And sometimes the problem is that because animal testing is seen as the norm, there is not much will from government sometimes, and I include Portugal on this, to go, to progress, to go forward, to make a modern, advanced, and more serious science. We, as a member state, again, are obliged to follow, and we do it, but what the regulations state are minimums, and Portugal keeps the minimums. The regulations don't say where you can go to or up till which part. So we keep the bare minimum, which is very sad because we could be much advanced like some other countries are and some other institutions in the countries. But we have really a big problem with the institutions here because they are not very keen to progress. So they keep the 3 R's, politics, you know, like on the basics. We have a petition going on for quite some time asking for the first non-animal methods lab in Portugal. Simplifying is this. And people, maybe because they are not so educated on the issue, people are not very interested on the theme. So we have also to get better on educating people, I must admit, here in Portugal.
It's cheaper to test on animals, right?
And it moves lots of different industries, since the breeding to the transportation to the, you know, the people who sell the animals and buy. There are so many people involved and so many scholarships also involved that it's not just a one-on-one business. It's a big business. Not that Portugal is the biggest. It's not at all. For instance, the UK, well, it's not a member state, I know, but just to think about another country because it's present here with us, the UK has much bigger numbers. But still, for the size of the country, we should have been better now.
Thank you, Rita. Dylan, I ask you almost the same thing. What's the way forward with this specific case? And how is Cruelty Free International adapting to this decision?
On this particular case, I mean, on the legal front, we'll have to wait and see. You know, Symrise, I think, has the right to appeal, and we'll have to see if they choose to do that. If they do, then we will certainly be doing everything we can to support that legal case like we have done in this instance. So that will be one option, and we'll have to see how that plays out. But the fact is that this ruling, certainly, and particularly if it doesn't change, leaves a very confused situation. We had hoped that this case would help us to clarify that kind of confusion between the two regulations, but it's left just as confusing a situation. So we have a situation where it looks like cosmetics ingredients are going to have to be tested on animals. That data will be produced off the back of animal suffering. And yet for the purposes of the cosmetics regulation, those same companies won't be able to rely on that data. So they're being penalized, and yet the test is still being done. And at the same time, they're encouraged to use all the information that's available to show that products are safe. So, you know, the producers of chemicals and products are now going to be just as confused as ever. Consumers are going to be even more confused because, you know, what are they meant to think about the state of the cosmetics bans when, you know, the commission claims to uphold the ban, but at the same time is fighting in court to ensure that ingredients which will only ever be used in cosmetics will be tested on animals. So that confusion still needs to be cleared up, whether it's in the courts or by, you know, revision of different bits of regulation. And we'll be doing everything that we can when those opportunities arise to do that. So that's something we're going to be focusing on really heavily. I mentioned the ECI Save Cruelty-Free Cosmetics. In response to that, the commission on the cosmetics issue said, we're not going to do anything. In fact, we're going to wait for this Symrise case. And we've seen how that's played out. However, they did commit to start working on a roadmap in the chemicals space. And that's something that we're working very closely with them on and other NGOs who work in this space. So that is something to be more positive about. It's a kind of more longer term trajectory, but it's something that we can work towards. So we'll be working as hard as we can with the Commission and other stakeholders to make that a success. So that's going to be really important. And then longer term, we need to think about the use of animals in science more generally and education, as Rita pointed out. And that's something that's going to need coordination across member states in the EU and across the globe. We need to look at funding. So, you know, reprioritizing funding away from projects and infrastructure that relies on animals towards projects that use non-animal methods, and also projects that, you know, innovate in the non-animal space. We need to think about education and training so that people know how to use these things. We need to think about regulation so that when these new innovative technologies are produced, that they can be kind of accepted into the system. So there's a lot of things that we need to be working on in the kind of policy space that we'll be working really hard to make successful. And in terms of the public, I think it's really important that they keep raising their voice so that politicians and commissioners and, you know, officials who work throughout the EU institutions can't forget that the public is on our side on this. They think that it is completely unacceptable for cosmetics to be tested on animals, and they want to see a way forward on chemicals and everything else that moves us away from animal testing. And I hope that people will take every opportunity that they can to remind people of that.
Thank you very much, Rita Silva from Animal and Dylan Underhill from Cruelty Free International. We return next week. See you then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, obrigado.
Na próxima semana teremos novo podcast. Siga-nos no Instagram e acompanhe as novas reportagens do Biosfera no Facebook.